Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. New York's Ground Zero Mosque looks set to go ahead. Depending on where you sit, it's a great day for American values or one part of a stealth campaign to Islamize the United States. Charges of a Muslim mafia in Congress, plans to burn Qurans on 9/11, and Republican stalwart Newt Gingrich calling for new laws to keep Sharia from taking over this country. This hour On Point, the Stop Islamization movement in this country. You can join the conversation. Do you agree with the decision to go ahead with the Islamic Cultural Center near Ground Zero? Have you heard the charges of Islam taking over this country? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first this hour from New York City is Samuel Goldsmith. He's a staff writer for the New York Daily News, and he's been the paper's lead reporter on this story. Samuel, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
What's the reaction this morning to the news in New York that the building of the mosque will indeed move forward?
There are a couple groups filing lawsuits already to try to stop it. The developers themselves are moving forward with the rest of their plans. They're going to file paperwork to become a nonprofit organization and work on getting design settled.
And so is the concern about this really mostly about location, Samuel?
You know, there's a mix. There are some people who say just not here, and there are others who are opposed to the idea altogether. You know, like you said in your intro, the people who are afraid that there's a movement of radical Muslims trying to take over.
How do families and the loved ones of those killed on 9/11 especially feel about this?
You know, they're largely split. There's actually a group of 9/11 families called Peaceful Tomorrows that are in support of the project. Others say anywhere but here, and others don't want it at all.
So with the lawsuits set now, is there a delay indefinitely for construction, or what's the timetable now?
Actually, there is no delay at all yet. The lawsuit that's being filed this morning is to challenge the city's procedure at the landmarks hearing.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is the city's attorneys will, probably try to have it dismissed, and if not, they'll go to court. But in the meantime, there's no injunction on construction. They have the right to proceed.
When did this become an issue, Samuel, in New York? Had this mosque been planned just recently, or has it been in the works for a while?
It's been in the works for about half of this year. It's really come to a boiling point over the last couple few months. It's become a national issue.
And can you talk about the contentious nature of this in New York City especially?
Yeah. There are a lot of people who feel that putting up a 13-story Muslim community center two blocks from Ground Zero is just offensive to not only the families of 9/11 victims, but the country as a whole that's still getting over 9/11. And there's also a lot of fear and misunderstanding about what the project is. Some people, just call it the Ground Zero Mosque, which is not really accurate, sort of a misnomer, and others fear it's sort of going to be a terrorist recruiting ground, a place where extremists will go and work together.
Let me play some sound for you. Yesterday on Governor's Island with the Statue of Liberty in the background, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg spoke to many of these points that you're bringing up, Samuel. He spoke out passionately in defense of building a mosque and community center near the World Trade Center site. In the heat of the debate, he said a basic question has been lost.
Should government attempt to deny private citizens the right to build a house of worship on private property based on their particular religion? That may happen in other countries, but we should never allow it to happen here. This nation was founded on the principle that the government must never choose between religions or favor one over another. The World Trade Center site will forever hold a special place in our city, in our hearts. But we would be untrue to the best part of ourselves and who we are as New Yorkers and Americans if we said no to a mosque in Lower Manhattan.
How are those remarks being received, Samuel Goldsmith?
The mayor's been an outspoken advocate of this project all along, and he's getting a lot of praise for his remarks yesterday.
Well, Samuel Goldsmith, thank you for the update. Staff writer for the New York Daily News. He's been the paper's lead reporter on the Ground Zero Mosque story, joining me from New York City. Samuel, thank you.
My pleasure.
Let me bring in now Representative Trent Franks. He's joining us from Flagstaff, Arizona. He's Arizona's 2nd District, represents the 2nd District, which includes Maricopa and Mojave counties and towns like Glendale and some of Phoenix. Representative Franks, welcome to On Point.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be with you.
Well, thank you for being here, sir. What are your thoughts about this mosque in Ground Zero and the Islamic Center that's scheduled to be built? Should it be built 2 blocks from Ground Zero?
Well, I don't think it should. But let me, if I could, predicate my opening on just a simple, obvious conclusion, I think, on the part of most Americans, including myself, that the average Muslim in the United States is not here with any sort of malicious intent. And perhaps that sounds more than obvious, but I think it's important that everyone understands that my comments are coming from a heart that has no negative attitude toward the people of different faith. In fact, I am the chairman of the Human Rights Caucus and the International Religious Freedom Task Force in Congress. And we work very, very hard, especially in other countries, to make sure that the Muslim people across the world have a right to freedom of religion. I believe that freedom of religion is sort of the cornerstone of all other freedoms. As someone of faith myself, I believe my own faith will do well in a free marketplace of ideals. So that's important for me to start out with that. However, I don't think that the mosque should be built there, and there are a couple of reasons. Number one, and it's a hard one, sometimes it's rather esoteric, there are reports that this is to be called the Cordoba House, which is symbolic, to say the least. This is when the Muslim world conquered the Christian world in Spain, that they changed a major church complex in Spain, Christian church complex, to a Muslim complex, and called it the Cordoba House, and it was to symbolize victory over Christianity. And one of the ongoing things that happens sometimes with jihad is that there's a tradition to build something to symbolize jihad's victory over whatever group that they're trying to be victorious over.
So you see the Ground Zero Mosque in New York is sort of a broader, bigger movement in Republican circles that sees a real danger of Islamization of America. But let me ask you specifically, because we're going to go into a broader...
If it were symbolic, it would be no concern. But when they took the hostages, when 9/11 occurred, this created sort of a it supercharged the recruitment of jihadists the world over, because one of the tenets of the jihadist movement is that if they conquer on the battlefield, that Allah must be in it.
Let me ask you specifically, sir, about Republican Franks, about your concerns in Congress and your move to call for an investigation into Muslim interns in Congress, because that's really why we have you on the program this morning, your concerns about Muslim interns on Capitol Hill. Do you believe that those interns have posed a danger there? You've called for an investigation into also the Council on American Islamic Relations.
Well, the Council on American and Islamic Relations was one of the groups named as a co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial. And that's a trial that resulted in the conviction of many charges of terrorism or of deliberate effort to undermine America. And I believe that people could go to the Northern District of Texas federal court website and get a tremendous amount of information on that, because it's impossible to relay it in such a short period of time. But I believe CARE to be a front organization in America for Hamas. Now, I know those are very direct and strong words, but I believe that to be the case.
And so what does that have to do with Muslim interns on Capitol Hill?
Well, I believe when you have a group that is a front group for a terrorist organization, that they probably shouldn't put interns in congressional offices. There are indications there in my mind that they have an intent to try to gain influence in Congress that may have malevolent overtones for America. The Muslim Brotherhood is not as overt as Al-Qaeda. The Muslim Brotherhood, even though I believe they're one of the most dangerous organizations in the world, have a tactic of trying to gain a strength within a society and subvert from within. And that, in my judgment, could be a circumstance that they might try to pursue with interns in Congress.
As a Republican representative in the U.S. House, are you comfortable with this kind of language, sir?
Specifically, tell me what kind of language you're talking about.
Well, speaking in this way about a large group of people, specifically a Muslim faith.
Well, I'm not speaking about a large group of people of the Muslim faith. I'm speaking about CARE. I'm speaking about organizations who are, in my judgment, are a front group for Hamas. I'm being very specific. And yes, it's uncomfortable. I wish it weren't the case, but unfortunately it is.
Well, thank you very much for your time. We're going to speak more broadly on this issue after the break. Republican Trent Franks joining us from Flagstaff, Arizona. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This hour, we're talking about charges coming from the right that Islam is engaged in a stealth campaign in this country and calls to put a stop to it. Joining me now from Chicago is the Reverend Susan Brooks Thistlethwaite. She's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and a professor of theology at the Chicago Theological Seminary. And joining me here in the studio is Intisar Rab. She teaches criminal law, constitutional law, and Islamic and comparative law at Boston College Law School. She herself is a Muslim American. It's nice to have you both with me. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Let me play to begin this segment some sound from last Thursday. This is GOP stalwart and possible presidential candidate in 2012, Newt Gingrich, giving a speech at Washington's American Enterprise Institute. The title of the speech, America at Risk. He said there is a militant form and a stealth form of radical Islamists, and that the stealth form uses cultural and politics to achieve the same end goal as militants do. And he called for new measures to protect the American legal system from a stealth takeover.
The fight against Sharia and the madrasas and mosques which teach hatred and fanaticism is the heart of the enemy movement from which the terrorists spring forth. And it's time we had a national debate on this. And one of the things I'm going to suggest today is a federal law which says no court anywhere in the United States under any circumstance is allowed to consider Sharia as a replacement for American law, period.
So we heard the concern at the top of the hour about the mosque in New York City, and now this sort of broader issue to which Newt Gingrich speaks here. Intisar Rab, what do you make of this?
Well, I think the proposal is one that should raise concern for reasons different from the ones that Newt Gingrich presents. If our American judges are tempted to cite Sharia law as binding authority in U.S. courts, then we have a bigger problem than Muslims in America promoting the understanding of Sharia law. And this falls into a larger context of antipathy toward citation of foreign law in U.S. courts that is, I think, more about trying to promote conservative values than it really is about the substance of the law.
Reverend Thistlethwaite, how mm-hmm. about you? When Newt Gingrich says in the same speech, this is a struggle with radical Islamists in both their militant and stealth form, I mean, what do you make of comments like this from the voice, one of the lead voices, really, of the Republican Party?
I found it a shocking speech because I really think that where we need to come together as Americans is in rejecting violent extremism. I actually think it's essential that we come together. And what I thought was particularly disturbing about Gingrich's speech is that he is making this into kind of a vague and yet all-pervasive threat in very much the same way that I thought McCarthy and McCarthyism made general ideas and shadowy ideas into the threat. And I think it actually distracts us from focusing on what is the issue, and the issue is violent extremism. And I think it actually feeds the narrative that extremists use to recruit young people, namely that United States or the West hate Islam. And I greatly admired Mayor Bloomberg's speech. The next paragraph after what you quoted in the show, he said, "We would betray our values and play into our enemies' hands if we were to treat Muslims differently than anyone else. In fact, to cave to popular sentiment would be to hand a victory to the terrorists, and we should not stand for that." And that is entirely my view.
And to Sarab, as a law professor, when you hear people speak about Sharia law and this real concern that many people do have, that Islamic law will somehow be infiltrated into this, will infiltrate this country in the legal system, what do you make of that?
Well, I think two things. One is that I also want to echo the sentiments that I very much admired and appreciated Mayor Bloomberg's comments in our constitutional legal system. The First Amendment guarantees that no religion will be established, and so we already have constitutional protections in place against bringing in anything other than the legal system that we have, and that there's also free exercise of religion. As for Sharia law being equated essentially with terrorism or violent extremism, that's what I read in comments that say we must fear the specter of Sharia law. That is to assume that we know what it is, it's somehow a bad, violent extremist system. So that's a very superficial caricature, and it doesn't jibe with the nature of Sharia law, which I can say with no hesitation as a scholar of both American law and Sharia law, that there's no condoning of terrorism. There are, in fact, very similar values that I think should be highlighted rather than pushed under a carpet to support some other view of Sharia.
Well, it's not just Newt Gingrich. I want to play a few more examples of what we're talking about this hour. Oklahoma State Representative Rex Duncan is one of several Republican politicians who've recently and publicly warned that this country is under siege from Islam. And he called for a ballot measure that would prevent courts from using Sharia law as law in Oklahoma and in the United States. Here he is on MSNBC on June 11th.
This is a war for the survival of America. It's a cultural war. It's a social war. It's a war for the survival of our country. Frankly, it's the face of the enemy. It's the face of the enemy, and we need to call it what it is.
Is this just politics, Reverend Thistlethwaite?
Yes, I think so. I think that we are moving into a campaign season. I think this is the new wedge issue. I think that fear works. And I think that the real un-Americanism is, in fact, fear-mongering, to make us afraid of one another. I actually don't even agree that we should use Sharia law in the United States, and I'm in print on that. However, it's an idea, and we value ideas that are different, perhaps even unpopular, and we value dissent, and we can't feed the fear narrative. And campaign seasons tend, and this is in fact the way anti-communism worked in the past, it is a way to, in a shadowy and vague sort of way, see the other as threatening. And the way we fight terrorism in the world is to come together in the center, reject extremism on the right and on the left, and say we stand as a people on the values of freedom and political debate.
Well, it's
so,
not just,
you know, I mean, in some senses, Gingrich is right. We need to have this debate. And in fact, here we are. We're having it. But I'm not afraid of it. And I think trying to make people afraid of it is, to me, truly, truly manipulative.
Well, it's not just in the political arena. Let's go to Gainesville, Florida now, where the Dove World Outreach Center plans to host a Quran burning event on the anniversary of 9/11. Last week, Pastor Terry Jones spoke to CNN about how, although freedom of worship is welcome, violence is not.
What we are also doing by the burning of the Quran on 9/11, we're saying stop. We're saying stop to Islam, stop to Islamic law, stop to brutality.
And then across the country in Temecula, California, a group held a protest over a proposed mosque. Organizers asked people to bring their Bibles, flags, signs, dogs, and singing voices to say that they would not tolerate Sharia law, radical behavior, and the like. Your response, Intisar?
I think that we can... We should certainly look at the timing of this. There are political reasons why representatives and perhaps Tea Partiers would want to rally around an issue that might bring them more cohesively together. And I think this is sort of a wedge issue now. And we can also look back in time and look at the historical narratives and decide which one we want to tell. Representative Frank talked about the Cordoba House, and it's ironic that he would mention that as a negative example, because Cordoba, or Muslim Spain, is actually the example of the most celebrated interfaith community, where Muslims, Christians, Jews live together, innovated in science, philosophy, and the arts, and there is a sense of trying to recreate that sort of convivencia, as it was called now. And those have been the responses in Florida to the Quran burning, that there should be Muslims, Christians, and Jews who come together and affirm that they are, that all adherents of those faiths are peace-loving people, and they'd like to promote that narrative.
Let me get some callers in here to Somerville, Massachusetts first. Ben is waiting. Hi, welcome to One Point, Ben.
Hi, James.
Hi. Go ahead.
It's very hard as an American citizen to sit here and listen to the gentleman, the U.S. representative. Where was he from? Shockingly, he's from Arizona. Very, very hard to sit here and listen to this hate. Very, very hard to sit here and listen to things that we should have learned in 1941, in 1945, in 1964 in Birmingham. This is a sad day. It's a sad country we're living in, where fear-mongers like this get publicity and peace activists get shunted to the side.
Ben, I'm glad you called, and thank you for making the point. Here's Johnny with another perspective from Owensboro, Kentucky. Hi, Johnny. Welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jane.
Hello. Go ahead.
I was listening to your program, and I think you did the gentleman a disservice when you implicated that he was talking about all Muslims. You didn't. He was speaking to a specific group, not
okay.
all Muslims.
Okay.
This country is like a centrifuge where there's a lot of, you know, there's bad apples in every barrel, and there's a lot of barrels out there. So
do you agree with people like Newt Gingrich and his comments about radical Islam and militant and stealth efforts to overtake this country?
No, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and that's all I think it is. But we need to keep the good and throw out the bad, if there is, you know.
Johnny, thank you. I'm glad you called. Here's Haja from Boston. Haja, welcome.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Hello. Glad you called. Go ahead.
Okay, so I had a few comments on, well, first, I am a Muslim American. I was born and raised in this country. And my daughter goes to one of those, quote, madrasas, in which we learn how amazing American values are and how synonymous they are, actually, with the core values in the Quran. How the Declaration of Independence, the Declaration for Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness has always been a core value in our own teachings. And so one of the fundamental reactions I always have when I hear these arguments is that this is the same argument that the Nazis made against the Jews, the same argument that the South African, the Afrikaners made against black people and when apartheid existed. And the same argument that is made when genocides occur. We are an identifiable group, and we are a group that loves America and American values.
Hajah, thank you. Thank you very much. As a Muslim American, Intisar, you talk about, you can hear the emotion in Hajah's voice. Talk about your community, your religious community, those around you. How do they view this moment in history, and particularly in with this rhetoric and these voices that we're hearing?
Absolutely. I this is obviously a very contentious and hurtful issue to the millions of Muslim Americans who are as, if not more, offended by people acting or doing terrorist acts in the name of Islam, and thereby perhaps giving fodder for the sort of fear-mongering that we see, not to say that comments like those of Newt Gingrich are justified. When it comes to the Quran, the caller talked about seeing similar values in Islam and American the American Constitution and history. And just one example of that, or two examples, is that there are Quranic verses that say that Muslims should stand out for justice, and secondly, that even if it be against themselves, and secondly, that righteousness is not a particular religion, but it's giving to the community and charity and goodwill.
I want to listen to some sound here. Yes, Susan, I'll get you after this. In the aftermath of 9/11, in fact, on September 17th, 2001, President George W. Bush spoke at the Islamic Center of Washington, D.C. Here he is.
These acts of violence against innocents violate the fundamental tenets of the Islamic faith. And it's important for my fellow Americans to understand that. The English translation is not as eloquent as the original Arabic, but let me quote from the Quran itself. In the long run, evil in the extreme will be the end of those who do evil, for that they rejected the signs of Allah and held them up to ridicule. The face of terror is not the true faith of Islam. That's not what Islam is all about. Islam is peace.
Reverend Thistlethwaite, what's happened since those kinds of declarations, especially within the Republican Party?
Well, I will answer that in a second, but I did want to point out that Ben and Johnny and Hajah are actually pretty much all in the same place. I mean, Ben doesn't want to listen to hate. Johnny says there are a few bad apples. And Hajah's talking about American values. I suspect that the vast majority of Americans, and I think it is the task now of religious leaders to speak to these people and not, segueing to the point about the GOP, to drive wedges among Americans. I think our security, our real security, lies in bringing those three people together closer and closer to secure the Americanism that we cherish.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. Some Republicans in this country are calling for a campaign to hold the tide against Islam in this country, and they see a growing threat of American courts becoming Sharia courts of a Muslim fifth column on Capitol Hill. Critics are calling it McCarthyism, a cynical political ploy to play on voters' fears, and more. My guests this hour are Intisar Rabb. She is herself a Muslim American and a professor of law at Boston College Law School. And Reverend Susan Thistlethwaite is with us as well. Here's some sound from the June 7 protest in New York City. One of the leaders of the group Stop Islamization of America expressed her concern about the proposed location of the mosque at Ground Zero.
We feel that Ground Zero is a war memorial. It's a burial ground, and it is an offensive mosque an idea of a mosque, to put it here where thousands of people died, where their remains are here, it's humiliating.
Let me bring in now another voice into the conversation from Roanoke, Virginia. We have David Gaubitz. He is the author, along with Paul Sperry, of Muslim Mafia, Inside the Secret Underworld That's Conspiring to Islamize America. When the book came out last fall, it peaked as the 16th top seller on Amazon.com. Today, Amazon ranks it 13th for books on terrorism, 10th on its listing of books on church and state, and 9th among books in its Islamic category. David, it's nice to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Jane. It's an honor to be on your show.
I'm seeing here that Congresswoman Sue Myrick, a Republican from North Carolina, wrote the foreword to your book, where she warns of a Muslim conspiracy to support Islamic terrorism in the United States. I'm reading endorsements by U.S. Representative John Shadegg of Arizona, who says your book is one of many that, quote, highlights the infiltration of radical Islamists into our society and the dangers that this poses, end quote. What is your message in this book that many seem eager to hear?
My message, and I'll give you a 10-second background. I've got 20 years active duty with the Air Force, 15 and a half years as a U.S. federal agent with a government's highest clearances, top secret and above, Arabic language trained by the U.S. State Department, primarily worked counterterrorism. I was the first U.S. federal agent to go into Iraq, handpicked, to protect the people of all races, religions, and cultures. And I would tell you today that the people in Iraq have protected more Muslim people and done more for the Muslim people than organizations such as CARE and ISNA and the other acronyms currently operating here in the United States. The American people have every right to fear what is being taught at Islamic centers and mosques throughout America. I deal, Jane, only in facts and not opinions. There are approximately 2,300 Islamic centers in the United States. I have personally been to over 200. My team has been to many more than that. My team is comprised of Muslims, Christians, and Jews, former Al-Qaeda members, former Iraqi police officers are on my team. Approximately 75% to 90% of the Islamic centers are advocating hate and violence against innocent people, and that is to include young Muslim people who do not abide by Sharia law. I will read you just a quick statement, Jane. I think this sums it up, the policy of CARE and the Islamic-based terror groups operating in the United States. You tell me who may have said this. The objective of Islamic Jihad is to put an end to the dominance of the un-Islamic systems of government and replace them with Islamic rule. Islam intends to bring about this revolution not in one country or in a few countries, but in the entire world. This book, this ideology, does not come from the Quran. It is a manual given to young, innocent Muslim children throughout the United States. It is put in your public libraries and your public schools. This is distributed and published out of Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, given to organizations such as CARE, who ensure that it gets in the hands of your young children in your public libraries.
In response to calls for further investigation of CARE, the organization itself says if it wasn't so insidious, it would be laughable. I'm curious what you say to critics of your work, and many of whom, you know, we've heard from this hour, that claim what you're saying and what you're stirring up is sort of a new form of McCarthyism.
Well, don't take anything that I say based on opinion. Take only the 50 to 60 documents we put in Muslim Mafia. And then once released through the courts, we have 11,950 more documents that are going to show and do show that CARE is a front for a terrorist organization. Even in the book, we have one document directly from Nihad Awad, the executive director of CARE, who was telling young children to follow the same character and ideology as Osama bin Laden under Al-Qaeda. It doesn't get much clearer than that.
Intisar Rob, would you respond?
I think that we absolutely should look at the facts. I'm not a representative for CARE, so I can't speak for them, but I do know that CARE is a organization registered. I believe it's a 501c organization, and it very clearly does not distribute pamphlets across America. But regardless of whether it does, the statement that mosques throughout America are preaching hate, and that 75% to 90% of mosques teach hate is simply factually untrue, particularly if the basis for this assumption is having visited 200 of thousands of mosques, even admittedly by Mr. Gaubitz. So I think we really should look at the facts and instead look at the mosques and educational institutions that teach and do see the similar values that are promoted for justice and for positive contributions to American society in Islamic arenas.
I've got to get some calls in here from Cookeville, Tennessee. Jerry is on the line. Hi, thanks for waiting, Jerry. Welcome.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. Please go ahead.
Yes. Well, my comment would be about the mosque in New York. I think a lot of it has to do with the imam there. I think his name is Mohammed Faisal Farouk. Mm-hmm. And some of his people that he's associated himself with, members of the Muslim Brotherhood, who have called for a 100-year program how to basically have a worldwide caliphate and have Islam the rule of the world. And something else I always notice, that people always talk about McCarthyism, but they fail to say that there were hundreds of communists that were in the government. It was proven by the Venona Project. But that being said, I think the young man that's speaking right now, he's absolutely correct. Islam is a worldwide, they want to be a worldwide dominant religion. They treat women as second-class citizens. And now anybody cannot see what's going on in Europe and in England, for instance, and don't think that that's going to happen here. I believe they have their head in a hole.
Jerry, thank you. I'm glad you called. Pam, welcome to Omaha. Welcome to the program from Omaha, Nebraska. You're on the air.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I have just a very simple thing I'd like to say, and I should begin by explaining that I am also Muslim and I am African American.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's important to point out that one of the advantages to living in a democracy is that we all have access to information. We can all choose for ourselves by studying. You know, we can come to understand the major tenets of Islam. A Quran, a Holy Quran, can be easily accessed and studied in the privacy of one's home. And I just like to say that I think ultimately this is the most efficacious way to fight the perpetration of ignorance in America as it relates to Islam. We do not have to choose to be at the behest of politicians and even some media, which have it as their aim to, I believe, continue the ignorance and the lack of true understanding about Islam. And so that's essentially all I have to say.
Pam, thank you. Reverend Thistlethwaite, your response.
Well, I think that in general it is really dangerous to make Islam into the threat. Did Islam attack us on 9/11? No. Extremists attacked us who were Muslim. This is not Christianity that is attacking us when we've had, what is it, a 900% rise in Christian militias who stockpile weapons and everything. That's not Christianity. That's my Christianity. They don't speak for me as a Christian pastor. And so I don't think it's a good idea to feed the narrative that there's a collective guilt in Islam. I think the few bad apples was a good comment that Johnny brought up. These are violent extremists, and it is the violent extremists we need to come together and reject. And I think extending that to Islamization and these kinds of more general vague threats is the kind of general vagueness that I think the term McCarthyism has come to mean. So I think we want to come together on identifying violent extremists and rejecting them, and when they are engaged in conspiracy, prosecuting them. That's where we need to be as a people. We need to be on that, and I see the rest of this as a huge distraction. And because it's a distraction, I actually think that's dangerous too.
Adam is in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Hi, Adam. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say, as a law student and someone who's read the Constitution, I just can't get behind all the facts and the conversation that's taking place. I mean, if you just sat down with the Constitution for 20 minutes, you could find so many holes in the argument that's being brought now against Muslim Americans, against, you know, like the move now to restrict public or private property and what they can call a Muslim center. Like, it just blows my mind. And I'd also say that I'm scared of every religion, but I love living in a country where they can all express themselves freely. If you want to talk about a mafia, let's start looking into Christianity. And I'm saying that as someone raised in the church. I agree with everything the Reverend's saying, and I think that this approach goes beyond politics, and that the tone of the dialogue is taking, it's kind of getting scary to me. It's kind of bringing up a Milosevic kind of thing. And so it may be being used as a distraction, or as, you know, maybe they even think they're educating people and trying to protect the American public, but we have an intelligence. I'm even though I fear the intelligence agency, I'm more comfortable with them dealing with what's going on with terrorist organizations than representatives in government who I wouldn't even trust to do my laundry, let alone investigate my fellow citizens. Thank you.
Adam, thank you.
Adam and Pam raise extremely interesting points, the importance of which I think cannot be understated, and that is the value of education as well as civic engagement in both American values and Islam. So, and Islamic values. So when we're talking about whether the specter of Islam or Islamic law invading U.S. courts as a point of fear, it simply is not something that our American constitution and our structures contemplate. I, for the record as well, would not want foreign legal system to take over courts. I don't think that's anything that we need fear. One point of correction, the imam's name in New York is Faisal Abdurrauf, mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. he works with Daisy Khan. These are two people who have a pretty long history, especially even before September 11th, but especially after September 11th, of civically engaging the local community. And I think efforts like that, efforts like the Muslim Public Service Network, which puts interns in D.C. every year to learn to perform public service and civically engage, are important ones and educational programs that will
but
help.
Critics also point to Imam Rauf as saying on 60 Minutes shortly after 9/11 that, quote, U.S. policies were an accessory to the crime that happened that day.
So I'm not here to defend Mr. Rauf or comments made by him, but I do want to say that to the extent that he and his organization, just like any other organization, attempts to promote positive American and Islamic values within the American values context and civically engage the community, that should be lauded and promoted as well by others.
Here's Manan in Savannah, Georgia. Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hi. I'm calling because I was kind of like hurt by the comment that they are talking about the Muslims in the United States, that they are infiltrating the Congress as if we are cancer. I don't know how to respond to that, but what I want to say is that we are a big community in the United States. We are as much as other religions in the United States, and we are much underrepresented in the Congress of the United States, and it's about time that the Muslim leaders or the Muslim representatives come to the Congress of the United States, because we are part of this country and we love this country as our country.
I hear you, Manan. I'm running out of time, and I'm so sorry to have to cut you off, but I would like to get a response from David Galbitz. Thanks for calling,
okay.
Manan.
Thank you. We the Muslim people do need to be represented in Congress, but they do not need to have CARE, a front for a terrorist organization, Hamas, being the people who decide who goes inside as interns. I would like to raise funds to build a church and a synagogue in Saudi Arabia. I asked the Saudi government, imams out of New York, and the speakers that were on this show to help me with that. is see how much support I can get to put Bibles and a church and a synagogue in Saudi Arabia. I want true interfaith and peace. Now let's see how many of these same imams will stand up and say, yes, we do want true inner peace and peace, and let's help build some churches in Saudi Arabia.
Reverend Thistlethwaite, I'll give you the last word in this conversation.
Harry Truman once said, in a free country, we punish men for the crimes they commit, but never for the opinions that they have. I want this country to be a place where interfaith, freedom, and peace thrive. It's not particularly humorous, sir. It's our most deeply held values. Thank you.
Reverend Susan Brooks Thistlethwaite, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. I appreciate your time today, Reverend. Thank you. Intisar Rab teaches criminal law, constitutional law, and Islamic and comparative law at Boston College Law School. She is herself a Muslim American. Intisar, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And David Galbitz, author and along with Paul Sperry of Muslim Mafia, Inside the Secret Underworld That's Conspiring to Islamize America. David, thank you. Listeners, we appreciate your input. You can continue the conversation at our website. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Mm-hmm.